We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken
record. Oh no!
We're fans.
It's one of the best things on television.
Oh! Alright, we got you a hold of the
level. No, you didn't.
We talk TV. Welcome to the show. This is podcast number 623, and I'm Libya, your host, television and film editor, and I have returning guests.
Hey, it's Peter. I write for We Live Entertainment.
This is Tom, and I chair Visual Media Arts at Palm Beach Atlantic University in Florida, and also host the Screen Tom podcast on Spotify and iTunes.
Hello, Malik Alameen, I'm managing director of Griot Theater.
All right, Tom, hit us with the news. What do you got?
Lots of news. Amazon has canceled The Sticky after season one. Jury Duty season two has been greenlit and shot.
Oh, that's right, because they don't tell people that they're doing it.
Rings of Power was picked up for season three, and Catherine Zeta-Jones will star in the revenge thriller series Kill Jackie, based on Nick Harkaway's novel in conjunction with Fremantle and Steel Springs. CBS, bunch of pickups. Ghost has been picked up for seasons 5 and 6, Tracker for season 3, George and Mandy for season 2, Elizabeth for season 3, Fire Country for season 4, NCIS for season 23.
Good Lord!
NCIS Origins for season 2, NCIS Sydney for season 3. They joined the previously renewed Matlock, which is going into season 2, and FBI Mothership for season 9. They've also ordered a Blue Blood spinoff, Boston Blue, with Donnie Wahlberg as his character, relocating to Boston. Elizabeth has cast Mary Louise Parker and David Alan Grier as guest stars. Brad Winterbaum, head of Marvel Television, has said that he's looking for ways to integrate Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist into the MCU. Marvel TV...
No Iron Fist, boo!
The show is poorly written. The actor's fine.
He is not. He knows no karate.
A privileged white kid playing a privileged white kid? Come on. It's perfect.
But I don't believe his punches. I do not believe he has the iron fist.
Well, Lord knows he's had enough time to get a real trainer. This reminds me, I somehow forgot to mention ABC stuff. ABC has set a Dr. Odyssey 911 crossover for March. Huh? And
why would you
no
want
one's surprised, they canceled 911 Lone Star because it was on Fox, and they have greenlit 911 Nashville, which will be on ABC. Got to keep that corporate synergy going. Hulu has canceled their Court of Thrones and Roses adaptation, and they picked up Paradise for season 2.
Okay, well, that's good, but I wanted Court of Thrones and Roses.
You're not getting it. Max has canceled The Bookie and renewed The Pit for season 2. Jeremy Strong will star in The Boys from Brazil series adaptation from The Crown's Peter Morgan. And Nickelodeon, they've ordered an Avatar sequel series, Seven Kingdoms, which is set after The Legend of Korra. Showtime has announced that Peter Dinklage will join Dexter Resurrection.
You're really trying to make me watch this Dexter show. You put Peter Dinklage in one of
the Dinkles.
Now I gotta watch that show.
And right, finally, Guy has announced that Derek Jacobi, Alice Eve, Lucien Lavis-Count, and many, many more are joining Kiefer Sutherland and Rebel Wilson in their upcoming Christmas comedy movie, Tinseltown, which actually looks kind of fun. And that's it. Which is
that
enough.
Is the news. All right.
I got to say, I really love I love Ghosts. Am I the only one who watched that
yes.
show?
Yes.
I love Ghosts, too, but I need to catch up. I'm behind. Like,
dude, the new season, they have done so many cool things to, like, advance the ghost lore. It's so good.
Yeah, it's like, not yeah. that good. Okay, so
you're
I
crazy.
Watched
it's
all
so
of
good.
The British one, yeah, and
yeah,
I tried.
The ratings are huge.
I get
yeah, the ratings are insane.
Huge like, ratings like, does not equal quality.
No,
I'm sorry.
You're right. That's true, but I really, it's a great cast. Like,
the cast is likable, and I dig the show. I've shown
I dig it, yeah. Like, I.
Appreciation students.
I love it. Like, but in fact, I like it so much. I know we don't talk about it, but like the recent episode this week, that was one of the few episodes that I thought was kind of not great. In general, I think they knock it out of the park. Like this week, I was like, "Eh, okay." Like,
all
it was
right.
kind of a mobster theme one, but anyways. I think it's terrific. So
networks right. are the last ones during like 22, so they all deserve right. some that aren't great.
Let's actually get started with the shows. First up, we're gonna talk Zero Day. It's a limited series. It's starring Robert De Niro. The cast is insane.
Jesse Plemons, Angela Bassett.
Like, it's pretty good. Liz Kaplan.
Like, it's a pretty good cast.
Really, Connie Britton.
Joan Allen. Yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah. So really, so, and I like Clark Gregg. And he plays a heavy, which blew my mind. So it's just, they've got the cast down. So I was like, all right, we're starting at a really good spot. Let's go. And it's a good premise. It is a good premise. And I will say, I think it's a relatively strong pilot, 90% of the pilot. And then it got me a little worried towards the end. But let's start off with where we're going, which is we start off with De Niro's character. He's President Mullen, I want to say.
Well, he's a former
president.
He's a former president. Right,
he's former president. 80-something, 40 former president. No resemblance to any reality at all.
But the big deal is that after one term, he decided not to go for re-election.
Even though it's kind of what we wanted in real life, but whatever.
But his whole thing is he had a child who died, and he was like, you know what? I don't want this. I just want to, you know, retire, whatever. But then you have this cyber attack that comes, and the current president wants to give themselves a little cushion and some distance from any political fallout and ask him to run this cabinet committee to do this investigation.
Task force.
But they basically, when they started listing all the powers he would have and getting rid of habeas corpus, all that stuff, and I was like, oh no. I was like, stop giving other people ideas. This is a terrible idea. Like, it was
Patriot Act looked like it was insane.
But the scene with the protesters is pretty good.
Yeah. But I have to
That's a good scene. The only thing is
I felt the speech was so on the nose that I was like, yes, sure. I see what you're doing. Please stop. Like, I don't need people speechifying to me. But I was enjoying, like, seeing the political maneuverings, and also Jesse Plemons' character, I was like, you obviously can't trust him. He's like hustling. He is a hustler, and he gave that hustler energy, and the more you find out about him, the less you trust him. So I like his, but I do like De Niro's wife. What's that actress's name? You guys just said it.
Joan Allen.
Always awesome.
Yeah, she's great.
She's really good. I felt like I really believed their relationship. The thing that, like I said, that worried me is when we got to the end, he's in his office and he's trying to open the safe. He can't remember the combination. And he looks at his book and it's almost like Jack was a dull boy. It's like Bambi killed
something about Bambi or
Bambi
something.
Bambi is the killer or whatever. And it's like written 5,000. Yeah. It's written 5,000.
Did I kill Bambi? Like,
yeah, it was all of that. And I was like, oh no. So now I'm like, now we're dealing with an unreliable narrator and I don't know what this means. And I do not like that trope. They've done this so many times.
I think the truth is that my father, in the last stage of his life, had really terrible dementia and stuff. And I think that dementia and Alzheimer's is absolutely like a thing that I understand why, with so many people who have family members that are dealing with that, I understand the notion of like putting that in stories. I totally do. And I'm down for it. It's just in this particular case, the cyber attack is already such a world disaster like type of thing that, yes, doing that where it looks like, because at the end he doesn't recognize, is it the kitchen staff or something like that?
Yeah, that guy was gone
5 years ago or whatever. And I was like, I'm not against using that for character study. I just think in this kind of show, I was like, I don't know if that's very compelling.
Because we already have so many conspiracies going on.
Right, but you've already got so many things. I was like, sorry, Malik, what were you going to say?
Here's the thing, though. That's the show, right?
Yes.
Right, we could be talking about some other show. That's not this show. This show has two things happening. It's the aftermath of this deadly cyber attack that killed thousands of people, and we don't know when the next one is coming, but the next one has been promised. That's one thing. We've also done lots of versions of that show before. Right. The second thing is we now have a very, very powerful person who is known for its competence who's dealing with Alzheimer's or some form of dementia. And this series said, we're going to put those two together and make a show. So I'm not mad at that as a premise. What our experience will be dictated by is how they execute it, I think. So I don't critique this show for deciding to put those two things together. The what they open themselves up to for criticism to me is how they execute that story that they've decided to tell.
Sure, that's fair.
So far, it's been kind of interesting. I like visually and acoustically how they are letting us know when he's having his moments when he's slipping. You talk about unreliable narrator. That is true, but they're also showing us, oh, he doesn't know where he is right now. Oh, the room is changing. I did this on another show. It's almost like Severance, like he's being reintegrated, you know, because he's experiencing things in different locations. So at the moment, I find it kind of interesting. The one critique I would have so far around that part of the premise is who notices this?
Right.
And so far, it's pretty noticeable. And his chief aide, played by Jesse Plemons, clearly notices and is covering. And his wife does.
Right, yes, clearly.
So far, the question...
Does the daughter know?
No.
She doesn't... No. This is not shown us.
Also, the daughter's barely around. I think they made that very, very clear that she tries not to spend any time with him. Tom is trying to...
I didn't like the pilot, mainly because the attack, the most significant aspect of the attack is a woman getting hit by a railroad
train.
That was amazingly low tech. And I've seen many other shows do a similar premise much better. And so they kind of like...
Well,
really,
they get lip service to other things happening. They were like, this happened and this other thing happened. Right.
There should have been a montage of some really amazing I mean, it's Netflix. Yeah. If they got the money for De Niro, they got money for cool special effects. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they spent all their money on De Niro. I was just not... I just thought it was... It just gave lip service to this devastating attack. Like Peter said, the crowd scene I thought was really ham-fisted and on the nose. And the thing with the... I just wish they'd... I don't know. They're probably going to get complaints from people about the dementia portrayals, whatever. I just think didn't think it was that compelling, considering they've got this amazing cast. It just felt like these writers don't quite know what they're doing, except for they've watched a lot of 24 and fallen into many of the same traps as 24 did. And everybody doesn't have to be dirty. Oh my gosh. Everybody's got... In a show like this, you need
hero. That's the thing, is that Mullen is that hero. He's the one that's not dirty, but he's the one with dementia. And so, like in the second episode when... You know, they've verified this fact about, you know, they've tracked down the actual hacker group that did the hack.
Right.
And they do the press conference, and he's like, we figured out it's domestic terrorism, and the project is called Prometheus. And I was like, where did he
come from? Proteus.
And I was like, wait, did he just pull that out of his butt? Like, he pulled it out of one of
his notes. He didn't, because it was top secret.
It was a top secret thing that he forgot, but then because of his dementia, he thinks he remembers
it. He didn't. He picked it up, Proteus, from his source.
Right.
The dry cleaner.
Yeah, but I think that that's not real. I think that that phone call...
Well, there is something real with Proteus. It's just not...
Yes, he can't, but he can't remember it. So I feel like... That's what I'm talking about, unreliable narrator. Every time he gets on the phone with the dry cleaner guy, it's all static, and he can't hear it, and he can't remember it, and he can't...
That has been a progression. I don't know if perhaps you know something because you've watched ahead. I have not.
I've only watched the first two.
The impression we have is that the dry cleaner is a real source that he has used before.
Right, but I agree.
But we don't know at what point... It separates from reality.
Correct.
But again, they give us auditory clues that things are happening. And then you also see, you know, his notes from when he just got off the phone with the dry cleaner and he's writing about who killed Bambi. So whether that is entirely fictitious or part of it was real, and then he started to separate.
But that's
we'll see.
Yeah, that's kind of my point. Is I got the impression that yes, the dry cleaner guy was a real person, but because of his memory, it's like his cook that he hadn't seen in 5 years. But we are watching it like he's that dude fixed him breakfast. So mm-hmm. I really think that the dry cleaner guy. Like the information that this phone call, we don't know when that phone call actually happened and what it was even relevant to. So when that's why at the end, when the guy's coming to brief the president, he's telling her like, yeah, his briefing was great, except he revealed this other top secret thing that has nothing to do with the cyber attack at all, you know? Yeah. And so that's why I'm like, oh, good Lord. He's now giving away secrets. Like he's giving away top secret stuff. So,
by the way, something I really, really hated is they did that old trick where they start the episode and then they rewind 3 days earlier.
Yeah, that was like, in this particular case, that was unnecessary.
Not only that, but when we get the context of that earlier thing, it wasn't that dramatic. And it's almost like you don't trust your own story to be compelling.
Exactly.
You had to trick your viewers.
But let's wrap this up. So next up, we want to talk Prime Target. I'm actually going to let Malik start Prime Target because this is your favorite show. Well, it's not your favorite show, but I think you like it the best of all of us. I am coming around a little bit on your guy. I liked him a little better in this, especially with him trying to be a spy because he sucked at it. And watching him struggle on something and not be good at it, I thought was kind of entertaining. So I liked the first episode with him being undercover at the Institute and trying to get the information that they needed, but not being particularly good at it. And he got caught like almost immediately. So I thought that was pretty great. Any comments, Malik?
Oh, well, you said you're going to let me start, but you did it.
Well, you know, I just ended up rambling. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
All right, so episode 4 is where he decides, I guess Ed and what's his name, Taylor, decide that they need to understand what's going on at the Kapler Institute.
Right.
So they send in the guy who has no experience in intelligence or field work go in undercover. And it's kind of fun how, for researchers, it's like they're in a kid in a candy store, which I like how they set that up. He goes in and blows up his cover almost right away. But it was fun how they used an obstacle, which is Taylor's observation equipment doesn't work with his, which gives us an excuse for them to talk out loud about what they're doing and what they're seeing. So I thought that was well done. But they now know enough to figure out what's going to get them to the next episode, which is they end up needing to go to Iraq to the dig site that started all of this.
The thing that I was really excited about and I couldn't wait to get to was when they got to Iraq and they got into the big room and you could see all the numbers and they had it like a big astronomy kind of thing. You could see the stars that represent math. And it reminded me, I was playing Indiana Jones with Peter, and they have these puzzles in the game, and you have to, like, figure out.
So you were cosplaying Indiana Jones with Peter? What's going on here?
We were actually playing simultaneously is really what was going on. But it reminded me of a video game and, like, solving a puzzle with lights and with numbers and math and... That's what I was excited about. I was like, all right, let's solve this now. And it didn't really disappoint because he's actually like looking at the constellations and looking at the translations and actually working out math right there on the spot, which I thought was great. But of course, you now have assassins trying to kill him like while he's trying to do said math.
And the widow of his mentor was not exactly happy to see him.
Oh, right. Yes, because then they tell her that, oh, your husband didn't commit suicide. He was actually murdered, and she's freaking out. And they give her zero time to, like, absorb that.
Help us.
Exactly. I was like, can she get 5 minutes? You know, 5 minutes to, like, process my husband was murdered, and we're, you know. That was kind of, and then they did, they acted like she was crazy because she was like, I need a minute. But I, the big twist to me, which I thought was cool, was when they have the assassin, following the mathematician, and then she's trailing him, and then he's, the widow has a bodyguard. So like everybody converges, and then it's just like,
at this market.
Yeah, right. At the market. That was really cool because that was a good reveal. Go ahead.
And then you have one of the better hand-to-hand fight scenes in television.
That was pretty good. Right?
Like,
yeah.
That is, that fight choreography, you might see it in a movie. You might see it in Jason Bourne. But for a television show, that was an incredible fight scene between those two.
They were both like a top level. One was a top level assassin, and the other one was a top level assassin.
Top level bodyguard.
Yeah, top level. Like the fact that these guys are like, this guy like worked from, like these were like top level people, and watching them fight hand to hand was fantastic. That was a real, I didn't know who was going to win.
The actor who plays the guy who won that fight, because that's the only one who walks away from that fight. He is both a really good actor, but also he is acting in the fight. Like when the knife gets close to him, the way he's glancing at the knife, like, okay, I've got a problem here. What am I going to do? Like you see him working the fight while it's happening. So I just thought that was high level fight choreography and acting for television for sure.
And the big reveal is when the dead guy's phone is picked up by our female agent, and it's her mentor on the other side. Did you get him? Is it done?
Is he dead? Yeah. She's like, oh my god. Her mentor has
betrayed her.
Yeah.
And so that propels the action into episode 6, which they go to France.
And they need a rubbing from France.
There's a rubbing from it in a museum in France.
Right. So they go off to that, and that whole, like, yeah, all the betrayal and all that kind of wraps up, and it's just... it's her godmother. Her godmother is trying to like convince her, like, no, I'm not really a bad guy and I would never betray you. And I don't believe her at all. Like,
well, this is in episode 6 when our math boy has a phone for some reason that
and she told him to get rid of it already.
Oh, I know.
It wasn't like he just didn't know. She said, get rid of the phone, they can trace it. And he's like, oh, well, I know better than you.
Because I used to be a top level secret agent.
Yeah, they needed a plot device there. Though, to a certain extent, people knew where they were almost the whole time anyway.
Yeah,
so,
because they did tell.
Yeah, so that plot device didn't fully pay off. It just showed.
But I think the big thing they wanted is a conversation between the agent and the mentor, and the mentor trying to say, no, I'm the good guy. And she's like, liar.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap this one up. So next up, we're going to talk about Paradise, which is so far on the list, one of my favorites. I'm really enjoying Paradise. Like the twist of this show. Yeah, I like that it keeps kind of changing form. So we start off thinking we're dealing with the guy, Secret Service, retired president, and the Secret Service guy, the president dies, and he has to, like, figure out who killed the president. But then you find out, oh, no, this is actually post-apocalyptic, and we're all living in a cave. And it's like Silo. And then you're like, wait, okay, we're dealing in Silo? And then what we have in this group of episodes we're going to talk about is... they do a flashback episode where Billy, who is Xavier's second in command and best friend, you find out he used to be like a government assassin, and he got brought in by Sinatra to basically be her personal assassin to go out and kill people. And the big twist of that episode is that we find out that they sent out an expedition of like almost astronauts. They sent out these scientists to find out, after the post-apocalyptic whatever, what's life like on the surface now? And
which is very Silo, by the way.
Which is very Silo,
yes. But this one is different because then Sinatra actually sends the assassin dude
Billy
out to kill them. Billy, yeah. So Billy basically assassinates our heroic astronauts, which is just like, what? Like, what do you mean? And they give you all this backstory on him to let you know that he started out as a bad guy, but being friends with Xavier and the kids has made him into kind of a good guy, except he's still dumb. Because he goes up to Sinatra and is like, I'm not going to do your bidding anymore. You're going to have to send a bigger assassin than me to kill me. And, of course, he gets assassinated. And
by his girlfriend!
But my thing about that is he does the movie or television movie trope where he goes up to Xavier and goes, I have a big secret. I'm not going to tell you now. I'm going to tell you tomorrow. Like, as soon as he said that, I was like, and he's going to die in 5 minutes. Like, that was just, like, that's the most disappointing of the writing that I've been. Like, I've been relatively happy with most of the writing for this whole show, but that was just pedestrian. Like, somebody should have sent that back for a rewrite.
Kind of a trope, or at least a pattern they're following in with this show, is that each episode ends with a plot twist.
Right.
So the big twist at the end of episode 4 was the fact that Billy gets ganked by his girlfriend.
Right.
And the big twist at the end of episode 5, as X is starting to piece things out and really realizes Sinatra is not to be trusted, is that there are words that mysteriously appear in the sky. They're lying to you.
That was so good.
Which infuriates Sinatra.
Of course, because she's a control freak.
And she's a control. For me, they're going to have to do some serious character rehab on her, because right now she just seems very mustache twirly.
She is. I agree.
And the decisions they're making, I did really like in... I'm going to skip over... I mean...
Go ahead. Do what you want to do. Skip over.
In episode 6, where we finally get some backstory with X and his wife and his family, basically the daughter gets called into school because of this class exercise she did. It's about food
economics.
Insecurity.
Yeah.
Food insecurity. And basically, the parents, the terrible parents of the kid, it's like, he ate until he puked. It's like, dude, nobody made him eat the cake. And it turns out that this was the kid that had bullied their daughter earlier. So I really like the breezy chemistry between X and his wife.
Yeah.
And the big twist at the end of episode 6 is, bum, 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 she's still alive. And that's
Sinatra has claimed that she's still alive. We also heard from the tablet said that the city of Atlanta got nuked. So I don't believe Sinatra. Sinatra lies.
I don't think that they're going to spend all this time with her just to have her get nuked. I think there's probably some other kind of shelter or whatever.
I think that's right, because it gives the central character some motivation beyond just a lie. If the whole thing about the wife is just a lie, that would feel rather empty by the time we get to the end. So I think there is some, there's something to it. I'll just jump in to say, in general, I like this show. I was hoping to like it more than I do. I think that the actors do really great work. I do think that the writers aren't fully up to the show that they signed on to write.
Okay.
And so there are some things that, you know, we have 2 different episodes, or maybe even 3, where X essentially says, I'm going to take her down. And he uses different versions of saying exactly that same thing. And it's just not well written from that standpoint. But a lot of it is fun to watch. So
I really liked when they took the armory. That made me laugh, especially because then they left the post-it note behind, and it was a reference to Die Hard. Like, I loved all the Die Hard references, especially because the president was like, you've never seen Die Hard? I'm going to make you watch Die Hard. And apparently...
Well, you know, Die Hard was a big thing in the show Brooklyn Nine-Nine, so it's interesting... Yeah. That this is another show where Die Hard becomes
Die
part
Hard
of the
is
story.
For the ages, baby.
I loved all the, but I liked that in this case, because in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, he sees himself as McClane, but in this show, he likes Hans Gruber better, and so he's playing that character.
Hans Gruber, yeah.
Oh, Gruber, thank you. Yeah. So I like that he is basically manipulating Sinatra and making her think, hey, we're doing this thing, but actually he's getting her to do exactly what he wants by initiating all these protocols. Because he's on the inside. He knows all the protocols. So he is basically 100% getting her to do everything. The only thing I was kind of annoyed by was Sarah Sahi's character, like, tipping off Sinatra. I was like, you don't owe her anything. She was like, well, you know, she's a grieving mom, and I felt like I owed her. And I was like, why? What do you owe her? You don't owe her a thing.
But so. She's also kind of on that team. I mean, she is part of how Paradise was conceived, and she chose everyone. So she actually had, she's not on X's side.
No,
she likes to, she'll go get in the shower with him, sure. She's not fully on his side.
Yes,
she's what
I agree.
Call a stakeholder.
Yes, she is. But I felt, I didn't feel like betrayed because, you know, she is her friend, but I bumped on the whole I owe her bit. Like, I bumped on that because I was like, you helped her. She didn't help you. Like, you don't owe her anything. So that was where I bumped. Anyway, but let's move on. I'm saying overall, I'm liking Paradise a lot. All right. So next show we're going to talk about is Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man.
Okay. So unfortunately, I only saw four, but I really like this show. So I do have some thoughts. Like I liked that the show, I'm assuming, because again, I haven't seen the last two, but I'm assuming what's happening is we're following Peter's story and we're also following what's the character's name? The one who now, Tombstone. He basically had a swap. He had to put
Tombstone.
Himself into the gang.
Yeah, Tombstone.
Right. And I really like his story too. But it's interesting to me because like, this is, you know, ultimately is a superhero show. And it's like when he basically goes to find his brother and the brother's in the gang and he's just like, ah, he's like, I'm just taking him back. And then the leader of the gang is like, you know, came to my house, you totally rude. And he's a member now. And he's like, fine, I'll be in the gang. Just, you know, spare my brother, which of course I'm just like, I'm just looking at a little brother like, you idiot. Like, but he's a kid. I mean, he's a kid, you know, like, but what's interesting to me is that like, at the same time, Spider-Man is dealing with these, like, this like Bonnie and Clyde duo who have some tech gear. We don't know who the tech is coming from, but they're kind of like, yeah, they're like bad guys that Spider-Man has to figure out how to like take out.
Right.
And I was like, well, technically, if Spider-Man was with his friend, he could easily just web up the gangsters and be like, all right, this is over. And I was like, well, that would kind of be like oversimplifying the situation because correct. The situation that's going on with Tombstone is it's like, well, you can't just solve it with being Spider-Man. Like, this is a harder thing. So I'm very curious to see where they're going to go with that. Mm-hmm. Like, I just hope that they don't like cheapen it because I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then back with Spider-Man, like, it's interesting to see, and maybe Tom reads way more like comic books than I do, but like, it's funny, like, we're at a point now in like comic book lore, pop culture, where if you bring a character like Norman Osborn in the show, anybody who knows any kind of basic knowledge of Spider-Man is like, oh, well, this is the Green Goblin, and I know what this is going to be and everything. And there's a part of me that, you know, it's Colin Domingo, who I love, and, you know, he's kind of being a Tony Stark, where he's like, I can get you these new gadgets and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, oh, I don't know about that.
You need this new
costume. My first reaction, if Norman Osborn is like, okay, well, I think we can get you better tech, a better suit, which, of course, like, I like because just like the Tony Stark suit. But I'm like, well, how do you do this with people at Oscorp not being like, hey, are we making stuff for Spider-Man? Like, is Norman going to make it himself or something like that? And they don't bring that, at least what I've seen, they haven't brought that up. And I was like, that would be interesting.
Do like, sort of do that.
Your logic, Peter.
They address your issue.
As I recall in The Dark Knight, the one with Christian Bale, I think what it is that Lucius Fox will order more, like, he'll order specific things. Like,
yeah.
Right. We need a Kevlar vest. We need a whatever. What the people don't know is that it's at Wayne Industries. It's actually parts that he's using for the best. Right. So I'm like, you could maybe do it that way.
No, no, no.
Like,
what I think is interesting, though, but in addition to what you're raising, I really enjoyed the exploration and discovery of what his suit was going to look like.
Right.
Because when you look at each of the permutations of it, they don't look like a suit for Spider-Man. Each
he's of them, like Mothman like, one time. Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
So
Spider-Man could have
been. So we're
going to
see, just we're gonna see different outfits?
So just a moment, yeah. Peter. So what you realize is that Spider-Man could have looked any number of ways, and what he lands on was not inevitable. And I think that's a nice little journey to go on.
Although for diehard fans, it is very reminiscent of a suit Spider-Man wore when he was in the group F4, which is
During the thing, he went through like 7 or 8 suits. He goes through a bunch of suits, and they're vastly different.
The poster for the show, he's in the normal Spider-Man suit. So I know, like, but I'm eventually just saying, he's going to get the suit.
But what's cool is they show him trying them out and trying to use them in the real world. And one of them, what was crazy, was all black and stuff, and it was all like weird. And then he saved this child, and she screamed in terror. And that he was like, great. "Okay, so yeah, not the suit, not the suit." So I like how they actually figure out what's the correct suit. But I think the thing that's really interesting about Norman Osborn is that he comes off very charismatic, and you want to believe in him, and you want to believe he's a good guy, but underneath, they give you just enough to know that it's all
something's
just
coming.
Yeah, that it's all
because
just,
we know characters.
Well, right. This is where I was going to say to Tom is that, like, well, that see, that's a little disappointing to me because there's a part of me that's like, when you're doing these iconic comic book characters, you want them sort of to be at the heart of like who they are as a character, like, but you can sort of change it. And a part of me was like, so there's no way we can do this where Norman Osborn, like, does he have to become a bad guy? Like, can't he still sort of inhabit the personality traits and the power, but does he just have to become, is it, it's inevitable he just has, because it just narratively, it's a little boring to just
we don't actually know that he's bad guy. So I think that this show is doing lots of shades of color.
Yes.
So for example, when Spider-Man meets Daredevil, Spider-Man thinks Daredevil's a criminal.
Right.
And in their fight and in their discussion, he starts to get ideas. Oh, I'm not sure. He kind of admires him, and he doesn't, he's like, I kind of, he's smart, he's really good at this. So I think with Osborn, we know what the story is, but I think we're also going to see reasons why every villain thinks he's the hero in his
story. Exactly,
exactly. I think we're going to see that in this series.
The thing about Norman Osborn is you know it's a ticking time bomb, especially when he saves Harry, and Harry becomes the new, you know,
man in the chair.
Man in the chair. So, and I like what they did with Nico and, you know, the Two's Company, Three's a Crowd. Her finding out accidentally because, you know, Harry thinks that she knows everything because they're besties.
Oh, right.
So, for me, I think by the end of this, either this season or this arc, we will have a much more satisfying explanation for why the Elder Osborn hates Peter/Spider-Man. Than in the Tobey Maguire, Willem Dafoe thing. Because that's why I don't like that first movie. Because I hate Spider-Man because I hate Spider-Man.
Right.
Give him a motivation. But that was Charlie Cox voicing Daredevil in episode 6.
That was really cool. Watching
the fight was fun.
The fight was fun because what I really liked is that it showed just because Spider-Man is stronger and technically probably faster, Daredevil's a fighter. He's a good fighter. And Spider-Man's a 15-year-old boy who doesn't really know how to fight. And so Daredevil kicks his butt. And
oh,
so,
wait. Does he not have spider sense? Because when he's losing to the Bonnie and Clyde, I'm like, the whole way his power is supposed to work is right before he gets hit, he knows it, so he moves.
Right.
Does he not have spider power?
He's only been Spider-Man for a month. Like, he hasn't gotten stuff yet. So that's the explanation.
He called Spider-Man freshman year, and then they changed the name of the show.
Yeah, so anyway, we're
going to... But I gotta say, though, I really like the show. I like the energy. I love the animation.
It's fun.
I like all the characters. Like, yeah, it's fun. Like,
all right.
Yeah.
Well, let's wrap this one up. And next up, we're going to do Severance. And this one, Peter, you said you want no spoilers.
Yeah, I've only seen the first two episodes in the new season. I love it. I think it's fantastic. I love Severance as a show. I just need to catch up. I keep hearing episode 4 is incredible. They did something they've never done before.
Yep.
But I'm assuming you guys all, before I go off, I'm assuming you guys all really like it, right?
I mean, yeah. Yeah.
They keep doing something they've never done before.
Seriously.
From my standpoint.
Yes.
No bad tropes here.
Yes. It's all good stuff.
I will say the thing I'm very curious about where I am, and obviously the listeners know more because they've watched more, is I'm very curious what's going on with, is it Helly R? Is that her name?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because when she lied about, like, when they were like, oh, this is what happened when I woke up, and I was like, well, that's totally a lie. I'm like, is it because she's ashamed that she's really the bad guy? And then Lydia off podcast was like, you said you wondered, well, maybe it's the Audi version. It's like almost like a spy. And I was like, maybe that's what it is. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm
so curious. You're just going to have to watch so we can't
say anything.
So
Peter's going to drop out so he doesn't get spoiled. And we're going to talk about episodes 5 and 6 of Severance. And I'm trying to remember what happened in episode 5. Episode 5 is
the
fallout from
the Portobo.
Oh, my God.
And Milchick gets his performance review.
I have to say the most passive-aggressive behavior I have ever seen is from Miss...
That little girl.
The Quan is her name, I think.
The little girl?
Yeah, the girl. Quan. Oh, my goodness. Like, she has this whole mean girl from high school vibe with the person, with the Karen in the office vibe, like combined together as a superpower. Because it's like when he gets his performance review and it's like, we have an anonymous report that you put on your paper clips in an incorrect fashion. And I was like, what? So people don't know in which way to read your documents. And I was like, the way that the paper says.
Words.
Oh, yes. You use your, he's like, your word choices. You use too big words.
Too many big words.
And I was like, but I like the way Milchick talks. I really, really like the way he talks. I don't want him to not talk that way. It has such a flavor to it. So his performance review was crazy. And it was like, I have, Mr. Milchick, I have a question. And then she's like telling him that he's doing everything wrong with the innies. And he goes, that's a statement. That's not a question. And then her next thing was like, is your performance review today? And she's like, that's a question. And I was like, oh my God. I'd like to slap a child. Go ahead, Malik.
I'd like to talk about the performance review and how he has that, Milchick has that moment with Natalie right ahead of his performance review.
Oh, right. Yes.
I'd never thought I'd be saying this about the show Severance. But that moment was the blackest moment on Severance to date. Here's why. Because he asks Natalie about how she felt when she received those blackface paintings around the founders. And Natalie looked him dead in his eyes and acted like she had no idea what he was talking about.
Yep.
And for me, in corporate America, that's the blackest thing ever. You talk to another black person and they pretend that they don't know anything about racism and haven't experienced it before. And it's like, okay, you can act with everybody else, but when it's just the two of us here,
what are you doing?
You don't have to act like that. So I just loved that he was trying to have that one-on-one, hey, just between the two of us, just family, let's talk about how you felt. And she just cold-fronted on him. It was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, the only thing I was wondering about, because I get what you're saying, but I was also wondering, like, she knew that his performance review was bad. And she's like, if I'm going to ally myself with somebody, it's not going to be with this dude. He's about to get out of here. Like,
I don't think it was that strategic. I think it had to do with, I thought it was a, particularly because I don't know that there are black writers on the show. I might be wrong about that.
There are not. Right. Because the guy who plays Milchek talks about, they bring him in to talk about racism on the show and they write it in.
Okay, because that scene to me is not about her being strategic. It's about her unwillingness. And it's about in corporate America, how dangerous it is
to have to accept
that you're black and that that affects your experience in this this organization. I think that's what that was about. And I think it was done wonderfully.
Yeah. Yeah.
For more details, watch the evening news.
But let's talk about the innies and the outies in the post. What I thought, the innie mark, the level of betrayal and just kind of desolation that he felt like after he finds out what's going on, like his whole, like he's acting really cold to like everybody for the whole episode. Yeah. And I was like, I kind of get like he doesn't know what to say. But what I liked is when he finally exploded at the end of the episode and he basically said, nothing matters. Nothing we do matters because all our plans, I told my whole plan to the spy, and that means they know everything we're trying to do. They know all our plans. There's no point. There's no point to anything. And so he just basically just kind of gave up and was just like, screw it. So it left him in a really, really kind of dark place. And then Milchek got in his face at the end of the episode and kind of threatened him and was like, not only do I know what you did that to the CEO and the founder, and you did this. And it just like, I was like, oh my God, like he was just right up on him.
So I'm going to catch you in the elevator. And again, just going back to the visual style of the show, we know that elevator is claustrophobic. It's normally one person at a time, up and down. And the fact that Milchek comes in, so now it's like, I was like, we're having this conversation like this. It's just really uncomfortable.
Right.
Great scene.
The things I thought were really interesting in episode 5, which was mostly about the fallout, is we find out that Irving, in Audi Irving, basically sees a car trailing him, and he's talking to somebody mysterious, and he thinks he's being trailed, and it turns out it's Audi Burt, who saw him, you know, hovering outside the house, and invites him over to meet his partner.
Husband, yeah.
And Innie Irving left a big old clue behind a painting.
Oh, hang in there.
No. The drawing of the hallway.
Right, but it was behind the painting that says hang in there.
Right, behind the hang in there painting.
Yeah, that's right.
The hang in there that he says was a clue. Moving ahead.
I want to get into the whole dinner at Bert's house real quick. Who they cast to be the husband for Irving was perfect. I love I was like, who do you have that could be at this caliber and like have like this is like a triangle sort of thing, and all the information that they're like kind of bandying about in the whole Attila the Hun thing, instead of calling your significant other Hun, we call him Attila. And
Attila.
That has some really dark undertones, because he was like, there's no way I'm getting to heaven, so I'm going to get severed so that part of me can go to heaven. And I was like, what kind of dirty did you do that you're absolutely certain that you're not getting into heaven?
Well, they give you a clue as to that in the same dinner, which is the husband accidentally says it was 20 years ago when you first did this. And they were like, hold on, the severance has only been around for like 11 years.
Yep.
So he's clearly, I think, so this is just theory now because I haven't watched ahead, he has to be like one of the founders or one of the main originators of the whole project, which is why his soul can never go to heaven.
Well, also, I think he did some dirty stuff for... I don't think he's an Egan. I think he did some dirty stuff for the Egans.
Or the Egans.
I think he did some... like, he murdered some people. Like, for him to be that certain that he's not going to heaven, he killed somebody. And so I think that the contrast between his outie, and I loved Annie Burt. He was all about art. He was so sweet. And that bird is gone, and all we have is this guy. Because also, we know that the company Lumen broke into Irving's apartment. And I think that's why he got invited to dinner, to get him out of the apartment so that he could snoop. So he's working with them. And I was like, oh, man. Audi Bird is evil. Like,
it makes it interesting.
It does, but it makes me sad.
Because it's a more complicated love story, essentially.
It is. And
I was wondering if they were going to become a throuple.
I was thinking too, because there was some hard flirting happening. I was like, there's a lot happening in the scene. And but anyway, so what else did you want to talk about, Tom? I derailed you.
The innies, I thought it was Hallie basically trying to emphasize to her coworkers that wasn't me. I've been violated.
Yep.
And manages to woo Mark back over. And the fact that she and Mark got jiggy in a mix.
I have to give them points because I couldn't figure out where they were going to go. And then when they went in that conference room, I was like, those windows, there's a whole wall of windows. What are you doing? But then when they did, I was like, oh, that's pretty good. I liked it.
Well, let's just go. You talked about on the last episode of this podcast, you talked about how season one, they were kids. Season two, they're adolescents. So right. It was so appropriate that they made a tent in conference room to be intimate. That was very cool.
The moment that kind of broke my heart, though, Dylan's visit with his outie wife.
And then
when he's outie, she totally lies to him.
Because she's cheating. She knows she's cheating.
That is so interesting that essentially the innie should be with the outie's wife. They are meant for each other.
Right.
She appreciates him in a way she does not appreciate her outie husband.
Correct.
So yes, she's cheating, but it's almost like that part of your spirit that I appreciate and who values me, I don't have access to him.
Right.
Mark, because he's undergone the integration
thing. Oh my God, his head is exploding.
Hasn't told his sister what's going on and is flashing between, they're not realities, but flashing between work and home. That's just crazy. The editors on this show deserve
all the points.
An Emmy.
Yeah, but I was also going to say, Helena's obsession with Mark is super creepy. Her showing up at that restaurant was not a mistake. She did that very much on purpose. And I think she's obsessed with him. And so she's trying to be around him. And it's just like, dude.
Well, she's obsessed with him in a couple of ways. So that's not all personal. There is a strategic
business component.
There's a bunch of ways she's obsessed with him, but a lot of it too is she initiated that sexual act with him in the other tent, and she did it not necessarily to maintain her, because the only time she was ever honest with him was while they were having sex, and she actually said a real honest thing to him, and I think she genuinely does like Mark, and she wants a relationship with him, which is why I think she very deliberately didn't say his wife's name. She knew his wife's name was Gemma, and she called her, what's her name? Hannah. And she I was like, you know her name is Gemma. Look at you trying to throw shade. So
Before we run out of time here, it's something I have to say.
Go ahead.
Which is also something I did not ever expect to say watching this show, Severance. Episode 6 was the first time I was rooting for Milchek. And I'll tell you, the moment where that happened, when he was in the room practicing with his paper clips, and then he went to the mirror to practice using shorter words. He says the long version of, you know, her being childish or immature.
Childish folly.
Yes. And then he shortened it to, you need to grow up. And then I, watching this episode by myself, started cheering out loud. I was like, say grow. Say grow. Say grow. I'm cheering. I'm saying this out loud, watching, because his sentence gets shorter and shorter, and you know he's talking to himself. Yes. That, to me, is one of the most powerful scenes in this series. I love so much about the series, but I'm literally sitting by myself watching this and yelling at the screen, telling him to say grow. And then he finally says grow. And I felt so satisfied. I needed a cigarette.
All right, let's wrap this up. And that's all we have to talk about for this week. Welcome back, Peter. You missed all the spoilers. So hopefully next time you can actually join us when we wrap up Severance. And so with that, we'll talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.